Good morning. It is 9 a.m. We are here today, February 9th, 2021, in the OPA hearing room, Suite 907 of the DNA building in Hagatnyo, Guam, for the formal hearing continuation of OPA PA 20.003, Basil Food Industrial Services Corporation versus the General Services Agency. Presiding over the hearing today is Public Auditor Benjamin J.F. Cruz. For the record, also present from the Office of Public Accountability are Jared Hernandez, Clarissa Roque, and legal counsel Joseph McNaughton. Will Appellant Basil please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good morning, this is Jerry Diaz representing Basil Foods Industrial Services, and I'm here with the president of Basil Foods, Mr. Michael Zhu, seated right behind me.
Thank you. Will Purchasing Agency GSA please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Marlon Aguilar, Office of the Attorney General, representing the Purchasing Agency, the General Services Agency, institutional representative present today is Mr. Robert Kono.
Thank you. Will interested party SH Enterprises please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good morning. Vanessa Williams, attorney for SH Enterprises, Inc. Seated to my right, the president for SH Enterprises is the Vice President Klee Suk Min, and President Tae Min is also in the room.
Thank you. We may proceed.
Thank you very much. When we broke yesterday, we were with Ms. Williams and your case.
Yes.
Your next witness?
My next witness is Jesse Garcia.
Ms. Diaz?
Excuse me, Mr. Cruz, if I may lodge an objection to Mr. Garcia testifying today. It's my understanding that the sole reason for today's hearing is to address the appropriate remedy for a patient's ethical violation, whether they should be suspended or barred. And in looking at the possible testimony that Mr. Garcia can provide, I can see no reason or no information that he can contribute as to that particular issue as to the remedy to provide in this case. Department of Public Works has never been involved in this case. They're not using agency. The only relevant agencies in this case are GSA, Department of Public Health and Social Services for the Manunka meals, and maybe by extension, Department of Corrections for the DOC meals. But the only thing that I can fathom is perhaps he's here to testify as to whether or not SH committed an ethical violation, and that's already been decided pursuant to your decision issued in December. So if that's the information that's going to be testified to today, I would object to that testimony. And the same goes for my client, Michael Zhu, who's also listed as a witness in this case. Basil has never worked alongside SH Enterprises. So again, I can't fathom a reason as to what my client can testify to that will shed light on the issue as to what's the appropriate remedy in this case. And so I wanted to lodge that objection on the record.
If you wish to respond.
Yes, we disagree with what the purpose of this hearing is, but it's also our position, and I think it's established the law, that jurisdiction is always an issue. And I believe that Mr. Garcia, as to what he will testify, I'm not sure. I haven't spoken to Mr. Garcia before, but what I believe he has knowledge of is the extent of the governor's office of the governor's involvement and the use of the Hakkabutan building, and the extent and possibly value of the repairs and work done to the Hakkabutan building. Both of those would go towards the definition of gratuity or favor in determining whether an ethical violation has been committed. I think they would also go towards to affirm what work was done and towards what the Mins believe the value to be and whether it was of equal consideration and whether there was a knowing or willful ethical violation.
And just based on those arguments, Mr. Cruz, I don't believe that that touches upon the jurisdiction issue. That touches upon whether or not the donation of the use of the Hakuboton building was actually a donation. I think what they're arguing is that because there was an exchange of services, equal value was provided such that it wasn't a donation, but there's already been a determination that it was a donation and that there was an ethical violation because they're a government contractor. So I think they're trying to get a second bite at the apple regarding an issue that's already been decided.
I will allow the testimony. I think this is a double-edged sword for the interested party. You may find that he may actually confirm the findings, but I'll allow you to. And Ms. Steeves, you can cross-examine him and prove everything that you needed to prove and with her witness. You may proceed.
Thank you. Mr. Garcia, where are you employed?
DPW, so deputy director.
You're the deputy director?
Yes.
How long have you been the deputy director?
Since the beginning of the administration.
And this would be 2019. Okay. Do you recall, in your capacity as deputy director for DPW, assisting with some work at the Hakuboton building?
Yes.
Okay. And was that in anticipation of its use for a war claim center?
It was used for a war claim center, but other than that, I don't know
Were you on site when the work to the Hakuboton building was being done?
Yes.
Okay. Were you directing that work?
Just on certain parts that I had to get involved with.
Do you remember what specific things that DPW did to the space?
So we did a general cleaning, and then we also did installing some air conditioner units to cool the area that was to be used.
And what work is necessary to install an air conditioning unit?
Well, you have to have the units, and then you have to make sure that wiring is provided for the units, adequate power.
And do you recall how many people how many people actually did this work?
Well, from DPW alone, I would say maybe about 12.
12?
But there are other agencies there to help clean up, general cleaning also.
And you recall how long it took, approximately?
Maybe under 2 weeks, I think.
I'm sorry?
I'm not sure, it's probably under 2 weeks.
Okay. Okay. And why did you do this, or who instructed you to do this work at the Hakuboton building?
It was from instructions from John Calvo.
John Calvo, okay. Okay, I have no further questions. Thank you.
Ms.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Garcia. For clarification purposes, who's John Calvo?
The governor's chief of staff, known as the deputy chief of staff.
And is it typical for him to instruct you to perform services at different locations for the government?
Well, he's from the governor's office, deputy chief of staff at the time.
Oh, okay. You indicated that the work was provided under 2 weeks. Were you there every day?
Yes.
Were you involved in any way with the negotiations with either Mr. Min or Mrs. Min as to the work to be performed in that space?
No.
So you had no discussions with them or approval, or did you obtain approvals from them regarding anything you did? Any cleaning, any
no.
Any insulation?
Not direct negotiations, but I could about and make the assessment.
Did they direct you to do anything, Mr. and Mrs. Mintz? So you primarily received your direction from Mr. Falco?
Yes.
While you were there, how much contact did you have with Mr. and Mrs. Mintz?
Very minimal contact.
Was it necessary for you to get their approval regarding any tasks that you did while you were there?
No. It's just from the panel box to run the wiring to the air conditioning unit.
But is that the extent of the conversation that you had with them?
Yes.
Okay. Did they have any knowledge of any of the work that you were going to perform while you were there?
I don't know.
As the Deputy Director of Public Works, were you the head person there monitoring the, I guess, the 12 people that were there working on?
The DPW staff, yes.
Okay. So typically when you get there in the morning, would you have to speak with either Mr. or Mrs. Mintz to talk about the work that was going to be done that day?
No, because we already received instruction on what to do and then we had to.
All right, thank you. I have no further questions.
I have no follow-up, thank you.
Where did the air conditioner come from?
The air conditioners came from the old Manila Public Health. They're used air cones, they're not brand new.
And who installed them?
DPW.
Who did the electrical wiring?
DPW.
When the Water Claims Office closed, did the air conditioner stay there?
No, we removed it and we reinstalled it up at the Dead End Public Health.
So even a used air conditioner wasn't even left there?
No.
Did you leave anything?
Like the air conditioning pads, we had to leave because it was poured in place, right? So it was not a reusable item.
So since it had been poured in place, it had become a fixture of the building?
Yes.
Was there anything else?
Just the wiring that they cut to size.
Okay, thank you.
No further questions, thank you.
Ms. Davis?
No further questions.
Thank you. Sorry you lost 2 days sitting out there.
Thank you.
Your next witness, please.
Our last witness is Mr. Zhao.
Mr. Zhao.
Please raise your right hand. Please state your name.
I'm Michael Zhao.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you. Sorry, Mr. Zhao.
Yes.
Mr. Zhu, what is your position with Basel?
I'm president of the Basel.
And when did you find out that the governor's office had used the Hakkabutan building for a War Claims Center?
I think it's from the newspaper.
Okay. And you believe this was a violation of their ethical duties? You also believe this is a violation of their contract with GSA, the Minumku contract?
Yes.
Is that why you filed the protest with GSA?
Yes.
Did you also believe that the governor's office violated its ethical duties?
The governor's office?
Yes. Have you ever filed a complaint with our protest with the Procurement Policy Office?
I forgot. Maybe not.
I'm sorry?
I forgot.
You're not sure if you have?
Yeah, I can't remember.
Have you ever filed a complaint regarding SH Enterprises to the Procurement Policy Office? Have you ever filed a complaint with the Ethics Commission? You don't know?
Yeah.
Have you ever filed a complaint regarding procurement to the AG's office? You think you did. Do you, when do you think you did that?
I can't remember that.
Do you remember what the complaint was regarding?
Yeah.
What was it regarding?
It's a donation, about the donation.
So how did you file this complaint?
My attorney did that.
Okay, why do you think you filed a complaint with the AG's office? So you're not sure if you have? Okay. Have you ever filed a protest with the Department of Corrections?
Protest for what?
I'm sorry?
Protest for what?
For anything.
DOC? No, DOC I didn't protest.
Have you ever filed... I'm sorry, you said no for DOC?
No.
I have no further questions. Thank you.
Can you see it?
I have no questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next witness?
That's my final witness.
Does the government have a witness?
Yeah.
Do you want to do closing at this point? Or would you rather do it in writing?
I'm sorry, what did you say? There's an option to do it in writing?
I'm asking.
I could do it orally today. I was prepared to do closing today pursuant to the agenda for today.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Sure, please.
For your time. You know, the law is clear with regard to whether debarment or suspension is an appropriate remedy in this case, and that's pursuant to 5624D. But the procurement law doesn't, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. The procurement law doesn't necessarily address how to determine whether a debarment or suspension is the right avenue, it is the right remedy to be imposed in this case. I looked at 5 GCA 5426 Section B, which talks about the causes for debarment or suspension, to see if that will give me some guidance. Section B4 talks about the violation of contract provisions of a character which is regarded by the Chief Procurement Officer to be so serious as to justify debarment. Section B4A talks about the deliberate failure without good cause to perform according to the contract provisions. And then there's section B6, which talks about the violation of the ethical requirements and standards set forth in Article 11, but that doesn't really give us a guidance as to whether you choose debarment or suspension. So, you know, in thinking about this, and generally speaking, the remedy should always be appropriate, or should match the level of the violation. And so when looking at this particular issue, I think there's two main factors that we need to look at. First is the willful and intentional nature of SH's action as a government contractor. And the second is the egregiousness of their action considering the environment in which it was performed. Now, taking into consideration that very first factor, the willful and intentional nature of SH, now, Mr. and Mrs. Min both testified that once they were awarded the Manumco contract, they became government contractors. They also testified that as a government contractor, they had a duty to abide by the requirements indicated in the contract, as well as the provisions. come in yesterday and testified that, you know, although perhaps she didn't understand what a gratuity or a kickback was when she turned in her bid packet, she later did research on what that was about. Mr. Min, on the other hand, testified that he fully understood what it meant. He also testified that he had intended to comply with those requirements or those, you know, or those prohibitions. In looking at SH's background, they have been a government contractor stemming all the way back to 2004, which is about 16 years. They're fully aware of the procurement processes and procedures, and they're aware of the ethical requirements. When looking at the affidavit that Mrs. Min signed and which Mr. Min acknowledged, these affidavits specifically talked about the prohibition against gratuities and kickbacks, and also talked about abiding by the ethical requirements. Now, these ethical requirements are so important to the procurement process that we actually went through parts of the contract which talk about those ethical requirements, and Mr. and Mrs. Min both acknowledged that they read it and they understood it, more so Mr. Min than Mrs. Min. But despite the written assurances when they submitted their bid contract, and despite their statements that they had intended to abide by those requirements when I questioned them yesterday, they still proceeded forward and violated the requirement that there should be no favors to the government. Now, the next factor that we need to look at is the egregious nature in which the favor to the government occurred. Considering the environment in which it occurred, we're looking basically at a four-month span or four-month vacuum where all of these things happened in November of 2019. That's when SH was awarded the Manunku contract. A month later, Basil appealed that contract. A month later, SH provided the favor to the government by giving them the use of the Hakuputan building. 7 days later, SH submits its bid for GSA 1-20, which is the food services contract for DOC. And then the next month, SH is awarded another contract, a $5.9 million contract. It's the DOC contract. You know, and when looking at these events that span from November 2019 to February 2020, Basil questioned whether they were treated fairly, whether there was effective competition between the parties. Yeah, it really just questioned the integrity of the procurement system. And so, when taking a step back, that's the basis for them filing the two protests and appeals in this case. You know, and it's worth mentioning that those affidavits are really important in this case because SH Enterprises agreed to abide by those requirements, yet when they turned in their affidavit for the DOC contract, they, for lack of a better phrase, they lied. They said that they didn't violate any ethical requirements, they didn't give any favors to the government when 7 days beforehand they had made the donation of the building to the government. And I think it's also really important to note that Mrs. Min testified back on October 6th that the Hakuputan building is vacant at this point in time, and if there is a public or private interest in it, and if it's for a good cause, she's willing to donate it. She made that same statement yesterday. So that assumes that if the government needs the building and it's for a good cause, she's willing to perform the same act, which is at issue today, which is providing a favor to the government as a government contractor. But I think that's something that should be taken into consideration today. Now, one of the arguments that SH has been raising is that there's no connection between the donation and the award of the contract. But if you look at the statute, if you look at 5 DCA 5630 Section D, which talks about favors to the territory, there's no indication in there that we need to show a connection between the favor and, in this case, the award. All you have to show is that they're a government contractor and that something of, you know, more than de minimis value was given, and that's what happened in this case. It's kind of like a strict liability situation. If it happens, there's no need to show why it happened or the effects of it. Now, so based on SH's deliberate disregard to the requirements in the contract and the procurement laws and regulations, their intentional donation to the government despite their assurances that they would comply with those ethical rules, their lack of candor when submitting their affidavit and their bid packet for the DOC contract. I mean, those things are so serious and so egregious that a suspension is not sufficient. And that's why we're requesting an actual debarment of SH based on the facts that have occurred in this particular case. And I wanted to quickly address two other things as well. The first being jurisdiction. This issue was raised previously by GSA when they filed their motion for summary judgment back in July of 2020. The parties briefed the issue back then. They raised the argument that the authority to hear this issue and provide a remedy rested with the Civil Service Commission and the Policy Procurement Office. And it's my understanding that upon reading the decision, the issue of jurisdiction was decided and that the public auditors did have jurisdiction to hear this matter and now provide a remedy, which is why we're here, for this order to show cause hearing. But they're raising it again, and the new argument is that it's the Policy Procurement Office and the Chief Procurement Officer that has this authority to hear the issue and provide a remedy. But I think the point that they seem to be missing here is that we're past the agency level. Those two code sections that provide authority to the Public Policy Office and to the CPO, they're at the lower level, at the agency level. We're here now at the appeals level, and we need to focus on those code sections that provide the public auditor the authority to now hear this matter and provide a remedy. And the other thing that I wanted to address today was, and I kind of alluded to this earlier, is the issue about whether or not the use of the Hakobutan building was a donation to the government, or if what SH is arguing, if it was a mutual exchange such that it wasn't a favor to the government. Now, yesterday's testimony was elicited that SH benefited from the painting of the walls, the fixture of the ceiling panels, fixture of the floor, you know, the panel for the air conditioning unit. But if you look at the code, 5630 subsection D, which addresses favors to the territory, we're not looking at the benefit to SH, we're looking at the benefit or the value given to the government. And it's important to note that based on Mr. Min's testimony, it seems as though there was no discussion as to an exchange of services, an exchange of values. In fact, Mr. Min said, I didn't even know what they were going to do. I told them that there were issues that had to be taken care of. I can't charge you with rent. And there is no testimony regarding, okay, I spoke with Mr. Calvo. He's going to do X, Y, and Z, and we're going to give him the rent for free. Again, if you're looking at the intent at that point in time, it was to donate the building to to the government, and that's evidenced by the donation letter issued on January 22nd, 2020. So really, you can't go back and try to change what actually occurred. You can't rewrite history. You can't say that now there's a mutual exchange such that there was no ethical violation. The intent at that point in time by SH Enterprises was to make a donation, which is in violation of subsection 5630, subsection D. I wanted to thank you for your time. Do you have any questions?
Whether the public auditor can debar or suspend a contractor is not just a question of jurisdiction. We submit there's still a jurisdictional issue. But the question is also whether that's the proper remedy that the public auditor is authorized to apply on appeal from a Section 5425 protest. It's not a strict liability situation. Basil wants the public auditor to find it can debar or suspend SH based on Section 5426 and Section 5706 of Guam Procurement Law. Now, if you read these statutes together and the rest of the procurement law, this just doesn't make any sense. And it violates Guam Procurement Law. It's inconsistent with previous findings of this office and inconsistent with the findings of the Supreme Court on the extent of the public auditor's authority. First, it's important to note that Basil admits throughout this appeal, and even so recently as its last reply brief, that this is a protest submitted to the chief procurement officer under her authority of Section 5425, which regards method of solicitation, or word of contract. Now, on appeal, Basil wants to cut and paste Sections 5425, 5426, and 5427. These three sections of Guam procurement law distinguish between the chief procurement officer's authority to resolve controversies prior to litigation and prior to appeal. Section 5425, which Basil protested under, addresses the CPO's authority to resolve protested solicitations and awards of contract. Section 5426 governs debarment or suspension. And Section 5427 defines the authority of the chief procurement officer to resolve contract and breach of contract controversies. Now, each of these sections separately define who has a right to protest or petition. Under that section, each section, they discuss what authority the chief procurement officer has to resolve that protest or controversy, depending on which category they fall under. Each section addresses how this chief procurement officer may exercise that authority, what kind of decision the chief procurement officer must issue, and who may appeal that decision to the public auditor's office. And I want to emphasize that Section 5426 does require that the chief procurement officer consult with the using agency and the attorney general's office, and emphasize that it does require a finding of probable cause by the attorney general's office. And I just point that out now because in Basil's brief they said there was no such thing as probable cause in the statute, but it's there. These sections are substantively distinct, but Basil argues that they have a right to protest and a right to decision under 5425, that it can appeal that decision pursuant to 5425 now, but now the public auditor can issue a decision under 5426 under its appellate authority over 5427 decisions. Basil also wants the public auditor ignore the plain language of sections 5705 and 5706 of the Guam Procurement Law, which discussed the public auditor's authority on appeal. So again, remember, Basil's arguing that the public auditor has authority to debar or suspend SH pursuant to 5426 and 5706. If we just read 5706, it plainly states, this section 5706 applies to a review of a decision under 5427 of this chapter. Now again, Basil protested under section 5425. Now they're saying, no, this is a decision regarding debarment of and suspension under 5426, but now they want 5706 to apply because this is somehow a 5427 decision. When you go back to Section 5427, it states, this governs contract and breach of contract controversies. 5427A says that such a controversy is between the chief procurement officer and the contractor regarding a contract between them. And a decision on that controversy, and under section 5427E, that decision is final unless the contractor, who has the contract with the chief procurement officer, appeals to the public auditor. So again, they want to rely on 5706, which says it governs reviews of decisions under 5427, but 5427 is limits who can appeal that decision, and it's the contractor, in this case it would be SH, to the public auditor's office. So not only does Basil want the OPA to cut and paste 5425, 5426, 5427, and then they want to apply sections 5706, which plainly does not apply, they want the public auditor to ignore section 5705. There is no discretion to ignore 5705. Section 5705A says this section 5705 applies to review by the public auditor of a decision under 5426 of this chapter. Basil has argued, they continue to argue, that the public auditor and it's reviewing a decision on their protest as a decision under 5426. So they can't have it both ways. If they want this to be a 5426 decision, then 5705 applies. 5705E is unambiguous. It says the public auditor's decision is strictly whether a decision to debar was in accordance with statutes, regulations, and best interests of the government, and fair. The public does not allow the public auditor to review a decision not to debar. And this is what this office and the previous public auditor found in the appeal of Teleguam Holdings LLC, in OPA PA 13-016 in January 7, 2014. 5705 must apply, and it restricts the power of the public auditor's review of a decision under 5426. Now, the reasoning of the Guam Supreme Court in Data Management versus OPA 2013 Guam 27 specifically addressed the extent of the public auditor's authority to provide a remedy on appeal of a decision pursuant to 5425. And again, I want to note that Basil has contended throughout its protest and its appeal, this is actually a protest under 5425. Now, in discussing the public auditor's authority, the Supreme Court affirmed that the public auditor, as a creature of legislation, had no general or common law powers, only those conferred on them by law expressly or by implication. And there, the Supreme Court held that the public auditor had the implied authority to revise a technical specification on an appeal of a 5425 decision because nothing in the Guam procurement law otherwise restricted its power to do so. Here, 5705 otherwise restricts the public auditor's authority to debar or suspend a contractor. It simply does not allow it. It can only review a decision to debar or suspend. So the laws make clear, the statutes, reading all of the Guam procurement law, and reading the previous decisions of the public auditor and the discussions of the Supreme Court on the authority of the public auditor to provide an appeal, show that even if the public auditor has jurisdiction over this matter, it does not have the authority to provide the remedy of debarment or suspension of a contractor on appeal from a 5425 protest, a 5426 protest, or even a 5427 protest. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Aguilar.
GSA maintains that there is also a jurisdictional issue here. With all due respect, the law only permits the public auditor to review the CPO's debarment decisions under Section 5426 and to decide whether the debarment or suspension was in accordance with the applicable statutes. The CPO did not hold a debarment hearing, nor has she issued a written decision imposing a debarment or a suspension under 5426. There was no written debarment decision that was imposed on a contractor that invoked the public auditor's review. With all due respect, the authority of the public auditor is limited to reviewing the CPO's written decision to debar, and not the CPO's decision to not debar. Secondly, the CPO does not have the power to debar unless the Attorney General concurs. In this instance, the AG has not concurred to these debarment proceedings or any other debarment action. Thank you.
Thank you. Did you have anything in your rebuttal? If you want to talk about
it? I just want to point out something quickly, Mr. Cruz. If you look at section 5426, subsection E, which talks about a finality of decision under subsection C or subsection F, it says it shall be final, conclusive, unless fraudulent or an appeal is taken to the public auditor in accordance with 5706 of this chapter. If you look at 5706 of this chapter, it talks about contract and breach of contract controversy. And in this case, we are talking about a breach of contract issue in this case because they did not comply with the rules and requirements of GSA 5619. When we filed our protest, we did request suspension or debarment. There was no indication as to 5426 or the code sections requiring that. But upon review of the code sections which address that, I feel that the public auditor, in carrying out its duty of preserving the integrity of the procurement process, has the implied authority to look at those sections, which will allow it to provide a remedy in this case. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, the matter is going to be taken under advisement, and we shall issue an opinion forthwith. This hearing is adjourned.
We're off the record at 9:42 a.m.